Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining. Today, I am talking with my father and my mentor, Jay Jarman. Thanks for joining, Dad.
I'm happy to be with you, Joy, and all of your friends.
Live, and we're in action, and we're ready to talk about all your great experience and insights. Thanks so much for joining, Dad.
Oh, my pleasure.
So I've got your Aloha shirt on. One of the things that I think you've instilled in me is a love for reusing things as much as possible.
Yeah.
And you have an addiction to Goodwill, right?
I do. They all know my name. I'm their best customer. It's a reuse kind of a store and a charity at the same time that teaches people how to hold down a job. And every time I go there, I feel like I'm helping people as well as finding colorful Aloha shirts.
Definitely. It's something that I wish they had in Japan because it's such a great way to get people back in the workforce as well as providing community support. And you can get some amazing bargains. So you can really reuse some good stuff. Always check Goodwill before you buy new, right?
If any of your friends come to Hawaii, I will take them to my neighborhood Goodwill store.
That's awesome. It's always somewhere me and the kids always enjoy going with Grandpa, that's for sure. So just to give people a brief background, there's too much to talk about. You're one of my guests where I had trouble narrowing in on a subject to talk about because I could talk about so much, of course. So just briefly, let's talk a little bit about your time in Japan, in Oita.
Sure.
Tell us about running a school and your memories of Japan, just a little bit.
Well, I loved living in Japan for a little more than 10 years. We were down in Oita City, Morimachi, in Kyushu. I picked up bicycle riding and bicycle racing when I was there and remember the beautiful countryside by the rivers there on the bike paths and cycling past the rice fields and meeting a lot of really warm and wonderful people. They tell me I was in Inaka, Japan. I didn't care. I was just in a beautiful place with some great people.
Yeah, great. And I think you were trying to do, or maybe it was the start of things which you ended up extending when you went back to Hawaii in terms of supporting kids and creating kind of a community atmosphere around your classes. That you were doing with your English school. Like I remember going to events where you would have kids performing their piano or, you know, doing whatever they could and supporting them. And then I saw so many parallels of that in your work with Common Grace, which we're going to talk about a little bit later.
Yeah, yeah. We tried to tailor our classes for the child. It was student-centered education of the very best kind because we worked with preschool and kindergarten kids, giving them a first exposure to a gaijin who was really friendly. And so every time I visited the yochien, I would get a little different, different little boy or little girl to come up and sit with me. And I would say hello, and they knew enough to say hello. My name is Ryota. And do you know my name? You are Uncle Jay. The parents loved it because it was a window on the world for their little babies.
Yeah.
We called it the Baby English Company. And it wasn't long before we were in every kindergarten and preschool in the town of Oita.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think you know, I went to Oita as a JET because you guys were there. And we would have our tennis events at Limoges, where we would gather everybody in my group and your group as well. You had created a great sense of community there, but I think my perspective was that you were really missing Hawaii and the connections in the community that you could make there. Is that right?
Sure. My home is in Hawaii and my life friends are here. But as you know, when we went to Scotland for a little less than 1 year, we made some excellent friends in Scotland with whom we're still in touch. We still love them and send Christmas cards.
Yeah, travel and building community all over the world, right? So let's talk a little bit about when you went back to Hawaii and how you got the idea for starting Common Grace. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I thought I could retire at that time. I had hired some people to continue my businesses in Oita. I had residual income from that, and I was just almost Social Security age. So I became a volunteer storyteller in the public elementary schools. And I did that for over a year, going to five different schools in my neighborhood, the west side of Oahu near Pearl Harbor. And I just loved being Uncle Jay the storyteller, and that was great. Then all of a sudden, there was a tragedy in a high school up in Colorado, Columbine High School in Littleton, Colorado, where students took weapons to school and shot to death some of their classmates and a teacher. And that brought me right back into full-time service, because I would never want a tragedy like that to happen here in Hawaii. And we started working with the youngsters in the elementary schools, hoping that we would give them a sense of security and purpose that comes from knowing that somebody cares. Because the two boys in Colorado didn't have a single adult friend. So we just started a mentoring charity, nonprofit, and that's what we've been doing for 20 years now.
Yeah, that's incredible. And congratulations on such a long-term success. I was researching you just like any other guest in this series and found so much great information about how your Common Grace organization is represented in the newspaper. For example, talking about the origin story of you talking to a school principal and really getting the idea a little bit more clearly. Can you tell that story?
Well, the day after the Columbine Massacre, I went to see the principal of the closest high school where my three sons would eventually attend, although they were still in the third grade and kindergarten. But he said the only thing that could prevent high school students from being so alienated and so angry is to have a healthy relationship with an adult who really cared about them personally. And please come to our campus, sit with our students, listen to them, respect them, love them, and we can prevent those kinds of horrible events happening in the schools.
Yeah. That's such a powerful story of you really wanting to help, but not really clearly having an idea how to help, and then talking to a principal. And then a very similar story of how you started Malama Mentors was talking to a school counselor as well, right?
He was a counselor who had been in an elementary school, and we want the schools to recommend the children who need us the most. So he had experience of seeing children transformed by that caring relationship, gaining so much more confidence and self-esteem, starting to raise their hands in the classroom and participate more, play in a friendlier way with their peers. And then he became a counselor in a local high school and sought me out to ask, why can't high school students become mentors? So we have found that it helps the big kids as much as the little kids.
Yeah, it was great to read that he was talking about how a lot of high school kids are so looked up to by little kids, but also high school kids need more experience as mentors for college education or college admissions, right?
Well, yes, it's good for their resume. But you know, when you think about high school kids volunteering, you think of them going to paint lines on a parking lot or pick up rubbish in a park or go down and clean a beach, which is all very well and good. But you know what? When they get involved with a little kid, a lonely child who loves them and looks up to them, as you said, they can see a life changing right before their very eyes. And that's a kind of volunteerism that will change their lives and affect all of their career choices and their future families and every other good thing.
Yeah, there's a fantastic video that you guys made for Malama Mentors about the invisible child and the invisible kid at the school. And that was so powerful to watch that. Can you describe that concept?
Well, I'll try to describe it, but I would invite all of your viewers to just go on the web and find Malama Mentors Hawaii. It'll pop up right on the homepage, and what you'll see is a baseball cap floating above a t-shirt with no kid inside. And you'll see this invisible kid watching other children play at recess, sitting alone in the cafeteria at lunchtime, sitting alone in the library. Another child runs up and grabs a pencil and never even notices this boy. He's invisible. But then his high school mentor comes and says, "Hi, my name's Kimi. What's your name?" And then what happens? The boy appears. And he's a real boy. Because somebody has noticed him. And then the tagline on the commercial, a 30-second commercial, is, "It doesn't take much to notice somebody and change their life."
Yeah, powerful. So simple, but so powerful. I love it. And I hear you getting choked up, and it's making me choke up too. It's amazing. But, seeing someone, finding someone, making that connection. Yeah, we're both tearing up.
Oh no, I'm not. I'm not. I'm a man. I don't get choked up. No, listen, I'm retired again, but I'm still putting in 20 hours a week because I love these kids and I know that we're doing something worthwhile here.
Yeah. Well, it's
Powerful.
and where does it come from? Like, you were a minister for many years. But from your childhood, your dad was a congressman. You grew up in Oklahoma, New Mexico, in very different situation. Where does your impulse or your desire or passion to help people, when did that start or where did it come from? Can you link it back to some event?
Well, I had two mentors in my own house. The first and most important, of course, was my mother, who was so affectionate and a good listener. She really wanted to know when she asked me how my day was. I would say, "Oh, I was fine." She said, No, sit down and tell me all about it. Don't leave anything out. Tell me all about your day. I really want to know." So I had a parent who was genuinely interested in my experience as a child. And that was good. And then we also had a woman who came supposedly to do her job of light housekeeping and cooking for us. She was a heck of a cook. Cajun cuisine from New Orleans, Louisiana. Clady was part Native American and part French and part African and oh my gosh, you name it. I'm just trying to think. She was a blend of all the best. And she really loved me and demanded and demanded my love in return and my respect. And she would say, "Who you think you is, king of the world? You just shut up and listen to your lady." And I did, and I learned a lot. And I learned a lot. So I had grown-ups touch my life, and now I'm happy to be able to do that for kids today.
That's awesome. And your dad, of course, was a congressman. Do you think your sense of like running a nonprofit, or, you know, managing people to get things done, getting fundraising, do you think that was coming from your dad a little bit, or where does that kind of NPO sense come from?
You know, he didn't enjoy the managerial administrative parts of his job. It was the politics of politics that left him quite cold. You would think that you would just have to love cocktail parties to be a politician, but he was a servant leader and responded to every letter that the 500,000 constituents in his district in Oklahoma ever sent him. He helped people find work and deal with the Veterans Administration and solve local problems. He would find lost people who had gone traveling and not kept in touch with their families. He knew ambassadors around the world, and it was the personal touch that my dad had that I think figures into my style of living and working.
Yeah. I'm showing a postcard right now that I found online, because your dad was a congressman. There's a lot of his memorabilia around on if you search Google, and it was really interesting. This is a postcard of your family walking in front of the Pentagon in D.C., and it's his postcard that he sent to all of his supporters or constituents. But growing up in a very public political family, that must have been interesting.
Oh, he sent those postcards every 2 years after being elected for another term. They were Christmas cards that came in the mail that showed our family as the children grew taller and taller. We always were walking together in front of a different monument or tourist site in Washington, D.C. And in later life, I visited the homes of people who still had those Christmas cards attached by magnet to their refrigerators in their kitchens. Wow. They felt a personal connection to our family.
That's amazing. And I remember seeing pictures of you as a kid coming to Hawaii with your family as well. Yep. So there was that first connection, huh?
Oh, yeah, that's probably why I'm here today and wearing this aloha shirt. You've got your beautiful aloha shirt on.
Yeah. You remember visiting and learning hula and everything?
Yeah, I think I probably could do it, but please don't ask me.
One other thing, as I was researching for this talk, is all the photos of you with all the kids over the years and all the mentors with the kids over the years. How do you advise or try to encourage the mentors to be themselves? Because it's not technically a tutor system, right? It's just spending time together and letting the kids lead for the interaction, is it?
Well, it is. And you know, a great barrier to conversation and to building a relationship with anyone is self-consciousness and feeling like I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say. So we stress listening above all. And we ask the children to answer the same question my mother used to ask me. How was your weekend? Tell me all about it. Don't leave out a thing. I want to hear about it. And then when you can be receptive of a child like that, when you can appreciate the child as they're speaking to you with nonverbal nodding of the head and smiling, but also the helpful little comments like, wow, great, tell me more. And then just build that relationship around the child's experience, not your own. You're there to show interest in the child's life rather than to bring a lesson or to perform in any sense. It takes the pressure off the mentors. The mentors tell me during the trainings, well, I can do that.
Yeah. It's being in the moment, being aware of where you are and who you're talking with and what you can do. I had a great conversation the other day with Caroline Pover, who spent a month in Tohoku after the Tohoku disaster in Japan. Uh-huh. And she collected all these donations from the UK and she brought it back to Japan. She was delivering it up to Tohoku. And when she was going to a certain building, she couldn't find the building. So she asked some locals, where is this building? Uh-huh. And then uh-huh. she realized, wow, these local people, maybe they need something. So then she started talking to them and realized it's important to be aware of where I am all the time and who the people around me are and what do they need. And I think that kind of mindfulness in terms of community building or support is so important. But how many days, how much time do we spend with a focus on the next step ahead and yeah. forget about where we are and who we're with, right?
Well, it's a mistake. The people who have the hardest time being relaxed and warm mentors are former teachers. Because they think they have to accomplish something in that hour. They have to teach something rather than simply enjoying the child. One of the mottos of Common Grace, our charity, is kindness for kids. And so we just talk about simple kindness and just being there with being with the child.
Yeah, that's awesome. We have some great comments. Thank you, Mary, on Periscope. She says, where does your father live? Sorry, I came in late. That's all right. My dad used to live in Japan. He lived in the States, and now he's back in Hawaii. So we're talking about his work in Japan and Hawaii, because I would love to talk about all 70 years of your life, Dad, but I think we'll have to hone in a little bit. Wendy says, curious to know if you have particular tips for being sensitive to cultural differences. There's great stories here. Thanks, Wendy.
Yeah, that's a good one. Tips for cultural sensitivity, awareness of differences. That was one of the most adventurous parts of my 10 years in Japan, was trying to learn how to really connect with people in a non-threatening way, where I didn't threaten them and I didn't feel threatened by them. And I think one of the things I could mention is, do not be afraid to make mistakes. In fact, I think people love me for my mistakes more than ever my accomplishments. But I would try to use Japanese and I always made horrible mistakes. Can I mention one?
Of course, go ahead.
Well, my wife Yuko teases me about this. She remembers it and we always laugh about it. Somebody called on the phone and I'm scared to answer because my Japanese is so low level. But I know how to moshi moshi when I answer the phone, moshi moshi. And the person says something like, Yuko-san imasu ka? Asking if Yuko is there. And so I thought, I can answer this. And I said, gomenasai, sorry. Yuko wa iranai. I wanted to say, inai, Yuko is not here, but I said, I don't need Yuko. Yuko, I don't need her. What a jerk, you know, but what, just trying to connect and do it in their in their space and on their terms.
Yeah.
That would be an all-purpose tip.
Well, I think your humor is definitely something that has made you very popular in Japan and Hawaii, especially with working with kids and just being funny and diverting from the seriousness of the topic. And like on your Common Grace Facebook, you've got a video of you introducing all the mentors or introducing their mentees. But of course, you grab a giraffe and you're introducing him as if that was your mentee. And the kids love it, but the adults love it as well. Everybody immediately relaxes. So I think your gift of the gab and your gift of humor is such a great way to get people's support, you know, around serious issues as well.
Thank you, Joy. I learned that late in life, and look at you. You know that. You're so good at that as well.
Not as funny as Grandpa Jay, that's for sure. Mary says, just think where many of our kids would be today if we had mentors like your father. Thank you, Mary. Wonderful.
Wow, thank you, Mary.
What I wanted to talk about, let's see, where am I? You have some awesome stories of success that you've had with individual kids in the mentor program for Common Grace. For example, I have a picture here of you with some kids next to a piano, talking about bringing kids out of their shell with music. You want to tell that story?
My. Is it a picture of me sitting with McCallan at his piano?
It looks like it's a concert, maybe one of your events. You've got two kids. Yeah.
Yeah, that's my boy McCallan. He was a third grade terrorist when I first met him, doing suspension time in the vice principal's office because they didn't trust him around the other kids. He had written a threatening Valentine's note to a little girl in his class. And you know what he needed was my puppy. I had a Shih Tzu puppy named Toa. So the school didn't want any animals on campus, so we had to hide behind one of the buildings and sit in the grass and play with the puppy. And we didn't talk much at the beginning, but just to be there with him. It turns out that he's a prodigy and one of the fine piano, he's a virtuoso. I mean, my goodness, you can't play any audio that goes along with that picture, but I have been part of his life now for 12 years. And I just feel like he's one of my own. Now, it started off pretty rocky. He was in trouble when I first met him. And we've gone through a lot together. But these relationships have staying power when an adult bonds with a child in this way. Good. Well, they I remember a visit that I made to Israel one time. We had a guide who asked many questions of us tourists, and I could tell that he loved his land and he loved the sites that we visited. He knew an awful lot about them, but we could also tell that he was interested in us. And he told us, "People don't care how much I know until they know how much I care." Well, that's great advice for mentoring and tour guides and anybody else.
That's awesome. I'm so sorry. My mic was muted, apparently, for that last story that I just told. I'm so
Oh,
sorry. Now,
I heard you
yeah,
fine.
you heard me, but nobody else heard me. So if you
Ah.
can't read lips, what I did say was that when I do training for guides, quite a lot of certified guides who have all the training and all the knowledge, they find it really hard to become listeners in a tour. And I always tell them listening is really powerful. And they can actually be perceived as better guides if they listen more and connect to people on a more personable level. So there's your sum. All is well. Okay, thanks, Mary. Sorry about that, guys. Donna says, "This is a wonderful story. Thank you. I hope to do some mentoring when I return to Australia." Wonderful, Donna.
Good, good.
Yeah.
All of our materials, training, and the things that we use to allay the fears of the children that the children have about reading out loud. We have some wordless books, that kind of thing, where you just sit and together you take turns telling the story of the picture on the succeeding pages. Everything we have on our website is a free source for anybody in the world that wants to be a mentor. So please, Donna, go to commongrace.org and steal, no, receive, take gladly anything that we're learning, we want to share. And then if you get some good ideas, please send them to us.
That's great. Let's talk a little bit about the events that you do, because it's not only the day-to-day meeting of mentors with mentees, but you also do some great events through the year, which helps keep kids excited and enthusiastic and brings the mentors and kids together in kind of a different atmosphere. So, for
Yeah.
example, I've got this splash of color event photo that you've got.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about your events and how they work as part of what you do?
Well, there's a fabulous water park, exciting and safe at the same time, that's out on the west side of this island. So we rent school buses to pick up the mentors and the children and go out there and spend a day at the water park, have pizza for lunch, and vegetarian pizza, of course, Joy. And the kids think that that's the best day, but I think the best day is the graduation party when the seniors in high school bring their robes, their graduation gowns, and their mortarboard caps, and put them on the children to take a picture with a child. Now I'm really going to choke up, okay? But when we take a picture of the mentor with their child and the child wearing high school graduation regalia, that picture goes up on that child's refrigerator and becomes a dream, which they didn't have previously. A very low percentage of the children we work with go on to graduate from high school, but I think through mentoring, we're giving them a much better chance.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think that's so powerful, right? To give them a mentor who's a little bit older than them, not an adult, and they can actually see how they might become like them. I think if
Yeah.
they're only interacting with adults, it seems too far away, right?
That's right. But then to just add, one of the most powerful things is when a child who had been mentored in elementary school gets up into high school and becomes a mentor in their turn, and then passes on the compassion and the interest in a younger child. We've seen it come full circle many times now in the years that we've been going, and that's so gratifying.
Yeah, that's great. I'm showing the graphic right now about how you do it. So one mentor, one kid, 1 hour. Can you talk a little bit about the routine when Malama mentors meet with the kids?
We always meet on the elementary school campus because it's the safest place for children who may have some violence happening in their neighborhoods or even in their own homes. A lot of kids love school because that's where they feel somebody's watching over them, and that's where they get to eat. For some of our kids, that's the only balanced and good meal that they have the whole day. So we take a team of mentors from the local high school or from the community, and we go to the elementary school after school during childcare time to spend an hour individually, one-on-one with the kids. And then we spend that hour listening, as we said before, reading together, and then playing, whether it's a table game or as simple as a game of checkers, or go outside and kick the soccer ball, shoot some baskets, or just play tag, run around, laugh, scream, enjoy the kids. I think in the beginning, it's the play that brings the children back the next week. But they soon begin to love the conversation time the most. And I think that's where the power of mentoring is a quiet conversation.
Yeah, powerful. And being seen, like you said before, or, you know, like just other kids seeing you, other kids listening to you, this is really powerful stuff. Yeah, even, and then one of the comments, I think, in the Star Advertiser newspaper article that was about Malama mentors, yeah. It was talking about just having some non-screen time with yeah. other kids. Right? Like yeah. now in this day and age, everybody's just glued to the screen 24/7, feeling like they're interacting with others, but it's such a artificial way of interaction, especially for kids, that putting the screen down and just kicking a ball around or having pizza together or playing a game together is really powerful and something missing in our day and age, right?
It certainly has been missing during this COVID-19 season. The children are not going to public school campuses now here in Hawaii. It's been like that for months. And the children that we work with, the young ones, have the hardest time learning anything remotely or at a distance. Either they don't have a device to connect with, or if they do have a phone or a laptop or an iPad, they don't have Wi-Fi in their house, and the kids being confined to their homes have taken away all of that healthy connection with their classmates and their neighborhood friends. They can't go outside and play. So we've had to find new ways of going to their homes and having some food to give the family as an excuse, but just staying in some kind of connection with the children and their families.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I read an article, I think, in one of the Hawaii newspapers the other day about how they're starting to drive vans around and have yeah. computers in the vans so that kids can do some of their online homework, because a lot of the kids in the poorer areas, they don't have internet at home. They don't have that's computers right. at home. But all of the curriculum is now online, which is a big gap, right?
Oh, a big gap. These are children that have a hard enough time learning, even when they're sitting in the classroom with their peers and with their teacher live. Some schools have found the money to buy portable hotspots. So if the child has a device, they can turn on this thing that connects instantly to the web, and then they can get their classes that way. But their parents aren't interested in education, so they don't sit beside the child and encourage the child to pay attention to what's going on the screen. And the next time the parent turns around, they're playing a video game instead of being in online classes.
Yeah, that's hard. I think that's been a challenge for a lot of teachers during this online shift, stay at home. Definitely coronavirus been such a challenge for education, I think, but it's also really shown how there's big gaps with some kids not getting food, like you said, not getting their meals, not getting the online education because they don't have that support at home. So even in Japan, we're seeing how the schools are a real support network for kids in need and kids on the edge. I wish there were more organizations here doing the kinds of things that you're doing. And if anybody knows of good organizations in Japan doing mentorship and kid support at schools, please get in touch. I would love to learn more.
Oh, me too. Please let me know.
Definitely. Let's talk a little bit about fundraising, because as a nonprofit, one of the important parts of keeping going is getting funding. You've done TV interviews in Hawaii. You've also done like classic concerts. You did a mango chutney making event at your house. So, can you tell us a little bit about how fundraising has been working and what success or failures you've had along the way?
The most faithful donors are former mentors because they see that it works, and they know that their donations are going to a good and effective cause. So about 80% of the inflow of resources come from individuals, not from grants or from government sources. But then the schools have been so pleased with the progress they've seen in the children that we've been able to mentor, that the schools have talked to their city council representatives from the different areas of our island. We might be in a high school in every single area of Oahu. So the city council comes along and says, "What do you need? We need more staff. We need more capacity. We need a 12-passenger van to pick up the mentors and the kids and take them to the park." And so they said, "Okay, great. Well, you got it." And the city council gave us enough money to hire a younger director for Malama Mentors and to buy a van. And some of the better known charities have helped us out, but for the most part, it's just people who hear about what we're doing and they like it and they think every lonely child in the world should have something like this, but at least it's happening in one place they know about. And so, well, it's just always amazes me, but money comes in to help the children, and so people want to help us help the kids.
That's
That's it.
awesome. That's wonderful. Also, there are really good systems in place in Hawaii, and I haven't seen this in Japan yet, but I would love to see it happen, where businesses will support donations in kind. So they would double a donation after it's donated. Or like my favorite one is Hawaiian Legacy Trees. And when I buy a tree to be planted in Hawaii, they kick back some of the fee that people pay for the tree to
Wonderful.
organizations like Common Grace in Hawaii. So I think if I buy a $100 tree, Common Grace gets $30. I mean, that kind of collaboration between businesses and nonprofits is a great idea.
Oh, how wonderful. That's great. I'll try and find out more about that one. But the Sony Open golf tournament is about to happen in the first week of January. The best Japanese golfers come over here to play. I often go down and caddy for the golfers. I use what little Japanese I know, but your audience would be happy to know that I'm friends with Chako-chan, who is the most famous female golfer that Japan has ever produced. Her last name is Hayashi, I believe. Hisako Hayashi, but everybody calls her Chako. Is that right, Yuko? Okamoto? Oh, that she's younger though. Okamoto's younger, right? But the golfers are generous. And so the golfers who come here, Tiger Woods, all the way right through the ranks of the professional golfers, they always contribute to local charities. And we always get a lot of help from them. It's terrific.
That's really good. I know that one of the nonprofits that I'm helping as an outside board member here is Place to Grow, and it's a Tohoku charity support, also making
Good.
events for kids and keeping the kids who, survive the disaster, but they still need that mental and emotional support. So it's a great charity. And they do like yearly fundraisers, like they do a Santa Soul Train for the kids, and to get funding for that, they do like pub quizzes, or people can donate different things online. But I haven't seen any of this, like companies matching donations in Japan, and that seems really common in Hawaii. It seems like a great idea.
The first company that would do it would be a supermarket chain. Because if people have an opportunity while shopping or after shopping to see a list of local charities and to see some banners hanging from the ceiling, they'll kick in a little bit of money and designate the charity that they want it to go to. It actually brings people into the store, and then the store matches it with another 20% or whatever.
Yeah. It's a, I mean, a lot of companies will do that as part of their CSR, their corporate social responsibility. How are they a good company? And then customers like using their services because they feel it's a feel good factor about branding, right? It's very
That's right.
smart. Wendy is asking, how old are the kids you mentor? Do you help them with university applications? I have a ton of resources if you need them, she says. Thanks, Wendy.
Wow, resources. My eyes just lit up. The little kids that get mentors are usually in the upper division of elementary school, third through fifth or sixth grade. Because they're more responsive and more appreciative. You know how it was when you were in kindergarten. The whole adult world was just a blur, right? And so if they're not mature enough to realize that someone is coming, especially and only to see them, then a lot of the power of the mentoring is lost. But third graders, 10-year-olds, they get it. They really get it. And they benefit more so. The high school students are sophomores, juniors, and seniors. And they are all, so far in the hundreds, they've all been among the best students in the school who have a sense of purpose in their lives already and are looking to go to college. They don't have any trouble being accepted to their college of choice.
That's great to hear. What
We've had every valedictorian of Kaimuki High School in the last 5 years
has been part of your sister, your
has been a
program?
mentor.
That's wonderful. And yeah, what a good thing to put on your college applications, but also to build that sense of confidence in the students themselves by mentoring, by being a mentor, it builds their confidence, right?
That's right. And if a little kid makes it through high school and wants to go to college, we'll help her go there.
Yeah, great. I think some people who are interested in running nonprofits or charities, some of the things that they manage with have trouble with is management of time, using your time in an efficient way and not letting your nonprofit take over your life completely. Has it been hard to try to balance like your free time and your work time, or to encourage your mentors to also try to keep a life work balance?
Give me a minute. I free time.
I assume that's a no.
I think I knew what that was at some point in my life, but I haven't seen much of that. But you're right. You don't want to burn out. You want to be balanced and healthy. But it helps to be an extrovert because you get energy from people rather than feeling drained by people and events. Hiring the right people and building the right team is everything.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Also the courage to delegate and to trust people, let them make decisions and let them succeed and let them fail and let them do is something that has brought more balance into my experience of nonprofit world.
I think that's really hard for founders like you, people who start the nonprofit. You're so passionate, and other people join who are passionate as well, but you have to let them do part of the work, even though you want to do everything, right?
Oh man, Joy, there's a black and white photograph of me on the wall in our office, and somebody added an L to the word founder. It says underneath my picture, our flounder. And I've made a whole career out of not being able to do things very well and being rescued by my staff. They love to know more than I do and do better than I can do. That's not false humility either. That's absolute fact. You've got to be vulnerable as a leader and let people teach you that are on your staff. That's a healthy thing, I think, for the leader, don't you?
Yeah, for sure. And that's the Blue's Clues mentality, right? To be a teacher, you have to pause and hesitate and pretend that you don't know things and let other people teach you, right? It's like, you know the TV show for kids, Blue's Clues? And that was one of the first children's TV shows to ask a question to the kids, to the audience, and wait for the response, right? And so that's such a great example of how leaders showing humility, right? Teachers showing humility, guides showing humility, mentors, you know, hesitating, asking questions, listening. It's all the kinds of concepts that you're doing. Wonderful.
I just hired a wonderful young Filipino woman who is going to someday be the director of the whole thing. And I wrote failure into her job description. I expect and as well. So that sets your people free.
That's really good advice. I haven't thought of that before, but yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Because if your founder, if your leader, if your president is always on a pedestal and is perfect, that has so much more pressure for everybody working for them, right?
Well, you know my fathering style.
What? Perfect.
Being worse than my kids. Kids are going to rebel anyway, and if you set a bad example, they'll rebel by being good. So that's you, babe. You have surpassed me in every way.
I'm not sure about that. You keep inspiring me, Dad. One last thing I wanted to mention was the award that you got for helping kids from the government. That's awesome. Was that in 2012?
I got two awards in 2012. One was for being the friend of youth, the Hawaii State award for being the friend of youth. And then I also received that year a medal for humility, but I started wearing it every day, and so they took it back. Now I don't have that one anymore.
That's difficult to give an award for humility, but you're not allowed to show it to be really, really humble, right?
Oh, I was so proud of being humble. Yeah.
So we have about 5 more minutes. What is the future of Common Grace, or what is the future of Malama Mentors? You mentioned you're training someone to take over for you at last because you've come out of retirement a few times to keep
Yeah.
doing the work, but you love it, right? It's living to it's the work you love to have as a part of your life, right?
I think the key to the future is to have a clear, well-lighted, exciting pathway where a child can be mentored and then become a mentor. And a high school mentor can become a summer intern. And that summer intern can become part-time staff and be a coach to the other high school mentors as a college student. College kids need part-time jobs. Come work with us. And then being a head coach and taking a high school team and proving themselves as they move along the pathway, then coming on to staff, and hopefully we'll be able to diversify and move out and go to the other neighbor islands. And I'd love to have Common Grace in Japan someday.
Oh, that'd be wonderful. Wouldn't that be great? What are some things that could really help in terms of regulation, top down, like from the, is there anything the government could do or communities could do to help support kids in the kind of way that Common Grace or Malama Mentors is trying to do?
What could the government do at that level to encourage and support and reinforce the work that a nonprofit does?
It's a hard question, but
Would
is
you
there?
please ask, would you please ask the your listeners to answer that question and let me know what can possibly done be done?
Yeah. It's
Governments are not, governments are good at reciprocity. They always expect returns on their investments that are awful hard for us to do. Cut down on the paperwork. There's one. Because when we got that grant from the city and county, we had to hire another person full time. Not full time, part time, and pay them to just keep up with managing the grant and doing all the reporting that was required. We would rather have spent that money on the kids. So governments aren't good at trusting little people like us, but they should be.
Yeah. Have you found a lot of support from companies as well? For I mean, most of your mentors come from the churches around the schools, but didn't you start at first asking bank staff to also take part? It wasn't just the churches. Did it just become difficult to deal with companies to get mentors or?
Well, as a matter of fact, we have mentors from the Rotary Club. There are several Rotary clubs that wanted to learn about helping kids. And so they do that. The Shriners, who volunteer most of the time at Shriners Hospital, which is a children's hospital, have taken our mentor training and they're doing it. People who have seen these high schoolers are in action, that are in action, they don't have any easily discernible church backgrounds or religious backgrounds or motivation at all. They just want to give back and they want to make a difference. And they bring their friends along. And so we don't have selection criteria that makes it make it hard for anybody to help a kid, just so long as they can pass our background check and we know that they're not going to harm a child.
That's wonderful. A lot of people are often scared of dealing with teenagers or elementary school kids. There's a fear I think especially after Columbine, there's a fear of kids or talking to kids, and it's so wonderful to have organizations like yours, which are just treating kids like kids. You know,
Yeah.
that's a wonderful thing about Japan, is that kids seem to be kids longer in Japan.
Yeah.
They don't get the gun violence. They don't get, you know, all the drugs and stuff quite as much as you're dealing with in Hawaii. So it's so great to extend their childhood by doing what you're doing. I love that.
And there are a lot of teenagers that I met in Oita who will say that they are shy. What's the word for shy? Samishi or something like that?
Hazukashi?
No. Hazukashi. I heard hazukashi a lot. But you know, the children that are chosen for Common Grace in the elementary schools are very quiet children, very shy children. And so you should see these mentors coming out of their shells when they have to connect with a shy child. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, that really is. One of the reasons I really wanted to talk to you is because in Japan, oh, I'm getting choked up too now. There's been more suicides for children during coronavirus. So it's something that I hope a lot of our listeners are thinking more about, how they can support quiet kids, kids who seem withdrawn. Let's try to think of some new ways to support kids and people in need, right? Thank you so much, Dad.
Thank you for your love, Joy.
Thank you, everybody, for joining. Have a great weekend. We're back next week. From Tuesday, we have 4 days of great talks. So please join us again next week. Thanks so much, Dad. Take care. Bye,
Aloha.
everyone.
Kaka
Aloha.
brava.
Mahalo.
Mahalo.